Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Last Thursday, 20,000 Latinos and Latinas gathered in Madison at the Capitol for a statewide protest, A Day Without Latinos. The people gathering were protesting a bill that would limit local officials from issuing photo IDs and another withholding funding from sanctuary cities. This was the largest rally since the Act 10 protests. AB 450 would fine local governments if they adopted policies keeping the police from asking about the immigration status of those charged with crimes. And SB 533 would curtail identification cards issued by local governments. This is awaiting, that particular bill is passed both the Assembly and the Senate and is awaiting Governor Walker's signature. The other bill has not passed the Senate, and there's some question as to whether or not they will be considering it at this particular time. So why did so many people walk off their jobs? Why did so many people leave school for the day, take buses from all over the state to Madison for these protests? We'll talk about this hour of the program. We're going to have several guests with us. Marisabel Cabrera is a private immigration attorney who runs her own law office in Milwaukee. She is has been appointed to the Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission, as well as elected to be chair of the Latino Caucus of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Marisabel, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on these very important bills that are going to have a huge impact on our economy and on our neighbors. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Zeus Rodriguez is also with us. He's president of Rodriguez Corporation, specializing in education reform, school administration, nonprofit management, Latino community development, and political advocacy. He previously served as the president of St. Anthony School in Milwaukee, which I didn't realize is the largest K-12 Catholic school in the nation. He founded Hispanics for School Choice to inform and represent Hispanic families on the issues of educational choices, and he currently serves as board president. Thank you so much for being with us, Zeus, as well.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
And later in the hour, we'll be speaking with the Director of Government Affairs for the Dairy Business Association. There are a number of milk farmers in the state of Wisconsin who have immigrant labor, and they're very, very concerned about both of these bills. So we'll talk about the immigrant labor force in the state of Wisconsin, and particularly in the dairy industry. So, Marisabel, let's start with these bills. Well, now let's start with this protest. What in the world motivated 20,000 people to go to Madison last week? It's a huge number.
Well, I think people just realized the huge impact that it was going to have on our economy, on our neighbors. And it's not just Latinos who were there. It was a huge coalition of different agencies and organizations who really just wanted to highlight the contributions that the Latino and immigrant community provides to the state of Wisconsin. And it was a really nice turnout to show the state and the legislators who were moving forward these bills that this is not necessary, it is not wanted, and we will do what we can to prevent it from moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Zeus, why were you concerned about these bills? Why did you go?
Well, I went, and first of all, it was a spectacular event. I was pretty much in awe. Pictures cannot describe what the feeling and the sentiments were there and what it felt like being there and seeing all the faces and peaceful demonstration. I think this was a reaction, in my opinion, to the broader conversation about immigration reform. And I think that what got the ire of most people, including myself, was the unnecessary action on behalf of the GOP Assembly leadership in passing and pushing forward this bill, since this is not a problem that we have here in Wisconsin. Now, I'm not gonna hold up a sign that Wisconsin's not Arizona, since I'm from Arizona and I love Arizona very much. But I understand what they're trying to say with that statement. So I think overall, it's a matter of respect. It's a matter of, you know, kind of what did we do to you to deserve this poke in the eye? And I think it does set a dangerous precedent moving forward. I think for the outreach that Latinos or that the GOP has been trying to formulate with Latinos, not just locally, but state or countrywide.
Mm-hmm. They're going to need the Latino vote at some point. They may probably need it, and if you have Donald Trump being the nominee of the party, which looks like it might be right now, that I can't imagine there's going to be much Latino vote. And yet, when the Republicans lost the presidency the last go-around, the thought was the Republicans have to figure out how to attract the Latino vote.
Yeah, and I was telling Scotty that, you know, I liken the analogy that I use is when a teenager gets drunk for the first time, and they wake up the next morning throwing up with a hangover, and they go, I'm never going to do this again, Lord. You know, and all of a sudden, 4 weeks later, they forget, and there they are drinking again, right? The Republicans knew what happened 4 years ago. Reince Priebus was very clear just a couple years ago saying that, you know, if you're not reaching out to Hispanics, you need to start doing it now. Even Sean Hannity was saying it 4 years ago. I remember I was watching his show, and he's somebody who's been pretty bad on the issue, in my opinion. He was saying, we need to do something. I think I'm ready to go ahead and give in and admit defeat, and we need to get some kind of immigration reform passed so that we can really talk to these folks and reach out to them. And 4 years later, again, just like the teenager, they seem to have amnesia, and here we go again.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it really is unfortunate because the huge lesson that I assumed that they had learned in that election was that the Latino community, while we do have very different, there's 20 Spanish-speaking countries, we all have our different dialects and our different things that differentiate us, but there are certain things that we will all coalesce and unite together regardless of what our political party affiliation might be, what part of the planet we come from. Certain things we will unite against, and those are things such as what was previously proposed, where the GOP essentially was proposing different laws and measures that would make life so miserable for immigrants that they would, on their own volition, decide to leave the country. And so these are sort of the measures that are being taken now here in Wisconsin, and that is something that Wisconsinites do not approve of in general, not just Latinos. And so it is the reason why so many people showed up to the protest and how so many people feel passionately about that, because Wisconsin values do not reflect this sort of these sort of bills. It's also there's so many families in Wisconsin that Latino-wise that are blended families, where there are Wisconsin-born citizens of this country and whose are blended with family members who may not have immigration status, and that is something that's very concerning to people who have relatives in those situations or friends, and it is not something that we can stand behind and say, oh, that's okay to treat these group of people that way, but you know, as long as it doesn't affect me. It's not something that I, as a immigration attorney, I know why people come here. It's the same reason why they've always come here, for, you know, better life and security. That's not changed. And it is, as a Democrat representing Wisconsin Latinos, I know that that is not something that any one of us will stand behind.
Yeah. So let's talk about both of these bills. What was the photo ID bill, that local communities cannot issue photo IDs? Why is it necessary to have a local community issue a photo ID?
Well, actually, it's both the city and the county of Milwaukee agreed to sort of collaborate and install a sort of panel to determine what sort of documents would be necessary to obtain these IDs, because there are many people, not just undocumented immigrants, but the homeless and victims of domestic violence, transgender people, who are unable to secure regular state IDs or driver's licenses because they're unable to gather up the documents necessary to obtain those IDs. And so this was sort of a remedy that a solution to that issue, so that people would be able to at least get simple things such as open up a bank account, a library card so they can have access to the internet, be able to fill in those prescriptions that they get from a doctor. They need to be able to identify themselves and say, this is actually me. And they're not able to get a driver's license or state ID. And I believe that the GOP's concern was voter fraud. However, their own voter ID state laws specify which types of photo identification would be acceptable for voting purposes, and these local IDs are clearly not on that list. The people who proposed these measures in the county and in the Common Council all said these ideas would not be valid for voting purposes. So it's really an unnecessary bill that they put forward.
Mm-hmm. And the bill that would has you concerned that has to do with whether or not you can be asked about your
status.
The
Sanctuary Cities Bill 450, right. Yeah. The problem with that bill fundamentally is I think there's a, from the way I read it, what they want to stop from happening is local municipalities from creating ordinances that would make it where they would not be able to ask. They would tell their police officers, don't ask about immigration status. And they're saying, well, that's already federal law. You know, they should just be following the law and whatnot. But the problem with that is that those of us who actually work in the community and understand the seriousness of crime and know that we live in a very diverse community of immigrants, both documented and undocumented, and for true safety, the police or the folks that need to be reporting the crimes and the ones that need to be testifying on behalf of the victims need to feel safe enough to come forward and talk with the police. And so this bill really concerns me because it's under the guise of making Wisconsin safer, but in all actuality it's doing quite the opposite, or it could do. And I don't want to overstate the bill, because the reality of the bill in itself, they argue, if you really read the bill and you understand what it's doing, it's not really going to affect. So the potentiality of it actually affecting somebody real is probably small. But first of all, there shouldn't be any potential, in my opinion. But it may be small. They may be correct. But what is it really saying? If it is truly a toothless bill, then why are you passing it except for poking the Latino community in the eye in order to satisfy some of the folks in their caucus or their constituency that are somewhat on the nativist side of this issue? Now, that being said, I didn't want to come on here today and just bash Republicans, because historically, you know, this issue, there's enough blame to go at both parties. However, here's where we're at right now, and this is the issue that's before us, and these are the bills that they proposed. And I think that it's just sad that the Republican Party, who I support, and I'd be honest with you, I'm an independent. I mean, people may say I'm not because I have a lot of Republican friends, but I am truly an independent. I'm a conservative Catholic who sides with conservative values when it comes to life issues and such, school choice, obviously, and those types of things. But this is the type of issue that completely clouds and just puts a lot of white noise around every Latino. They don't want to listen to their other ideas. They don't want to listen about school choice. They don't want to listen about pro-life or any of the other values that are very multifaceted Latino community might agree with them on, because this is just, it's white noise. It's offensive.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I wouldn't say that the impact would be minimal, because this particular bill really does spread hate and fear, and not just within the against immigrants, but within the immigrant community. They would essentially, as shown in other states where they have passed these types of bills, is all it does is essentially move the undocumented immigrants into further and deeper underground, and it will impact negatively law enforcement, because if people are fearful that if they seek help or if they are needed for any sort of law enforcement purpose, that somebody is going to inquire about their immigration status and potentially lead to their deportation, they will have nothing to do with law enforcement. And clearly there is no law enforcement department anywhere that can be productive and successful without the assistance of any community. And we do have a very large immigrant community here. And it's not just going to be immigrants who will withdraw from providing assistance to law enforcement, but people who are here, who are citizens, who are, again, in these blended families, they're not going to want to attract any sort of attention to that family, knowing that they're going to be asked about their immigration status. In all these other states where these bills were passed, what was the result? Schools were empty. The fields were empty. Businesses were losing all sorts of profits because they were leaving the state, exactly what they wanted. And so it's actually had a very negative impact. In Georgia, millions of dollars were lost in the fields because they weren't able to pick the crops.
Remember that. Yeah.
So it's something that, why would we want this to happen in Wisconsin? And if the GOP really is concerned about the economy and improving Wisconsin's economy, this is a measure that would do the exact opposite. So it doesn't even make sense that it made it past committee, that it would even come to a vote, because it's not something that is going to benefit our economy. It's not going to benefit our law enforcement in any way. So again, it's another unnecessary bill. Both of them are unnecessary. The law enforcement already, Milwaukee specifically, I can speak to because of being a member of the commission. I'm not here representing the commission, right, but I can speak to the budgets that come before us. We already are strained for resources, and there's no way that they're going to be able to, in addition to their already, their, the issues that they have to address here within the state, to now start enforcing immigration federal laws, which is outside of their jurisdiction to begin with. It is something that Milwaukee does not is not a sanctuary city to begin with. While the county supervisors did pass a resolution regarding immigration detainers, it is something that it was left up to the discretion of the sheriff. And it's also, again, something that's unnecessary because it doesn't help law enforcement to inquire as to somebody's immigration status. If somebody committed an offense, a crime, it doesn't help with their investigation in any way whatsoever. So either way, they're going to be investigated, prosecuted if necessary, and knowing their immigration status is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about the economic impact and the growth of the Latino community. Let's talk about that a little bit more. I didn't realize that the dairy industry in Wisconsin counted so heavily on the immigrant community. It's huge. It's over half the workers. Dairy farmers, we'll talk to a dairy farmer in a moment, people, and they were in Madison as well. What are the impacts of the Latino community all over the state of Wisconsin? How big is it? Zeus?
Well, yes. I mean, there's a little over, I want to say, roughly 400,000 Latinos across Wisconsin, and 75% of those live outside of the city of Milwaukee. So we're pretty dispersed. And so, yeah, the kind of impact, and every time I work with assembly people and state senators or other municipality dignitaries, if you will, they're always coming up to me and saying, how can we reach out to Latino? We have such a fast-growing Latino population in, you know, Sheboygan or in Fond du Lac, or, you know, Delavan Darien now has the highest percentage of English language learners in their school district over MPS. Mm. Yes, I mean, it's really taking people by surprise. And unfortunately, I think that might play into what's happening here, is that there's more fear. And that's the thing, like a lot of the Republicans who are defending this bill are saying that, well, they're not asking the witnesses about their, it's only people charged with the crime. Mm-hmm. But you're expecting them to trust you? Well, trust me, the bill doesn't say that, really. You're going to trust? The people aren't going to trust that. They don't want to bring any light into their home life. It could be an undocumented mom with a citizen father and two citizen children, and even the citizens aren't going to want to come forward because it might shed light on their wife, you know?
It's true. And I think one thing that people tend to forget, as an immigration lawyer, I noticed many people who come to this country are persecuted in their home countries. And in a lot of those countries, the authorities themselves are very corrupt. So it's not something that inherently they already have this fear for the authorities. And now if they're hearing that, oh, now here in where I reside, law enforcement is going to start inquiring as to my status, and I am here undocumented, they're going to want nothing to do with any law enforcement personnel of any type, because they already have a fear that they're all corrupt from their own experiences back in their home countries. And then in addition to that, they know their status, and they know that anybody, the more people who know about it, the more likely it is for them to be deported back to their home country. So that is something that I don't think people recognize, that it is already a fear that they have with law enforcement and just political authorities to begin with. And then if you add this layer where all you see on TV is all this anti-immigrant, anti-foreign sentiment, right, then it's when you see it locally coming in this form of bill, that's something that instantly they're going to withdraw and try to be as far under the radar as possible.
Are there many undocumented in the state of Wisconsin who have been deported?
I wouldn't know about a specific figure, but there is a very high number. Just nationally, that this record number is every year that are being deported. And so from Wisconsin, I don't know the specific numbers, but it is a pretty high number. I have a lot of clients that I have to represent in immigration court, and many times it's mostly people who are here without authorization. There's not the great majority are just people who entered without authorization or who have overstayed their visas. There isn't anybody that I know, even myself included. I am an immigration immigrant advocate. I'm an immigration attorney by profession. But I don't know anybody who's advocating to prevent the deportation of criminals. It's really preventing the separation of families who are, aside from their one minor strike here without authorization, but aside from that, have led very productive lives and contributed heavily to this economy in Wisconsin. A huge majority of the entrepreneurs in Wisconsin and in Milwaukee are immigrants, actually. And so they do contribute a lot to Wisconsin. It's just that people don't really know that. The majority of people who are in favor of these types of bills is because they really don't know the impact that it would have on our
country. I don't know the number either, but I've personally witnessed friends of mine who've been deported. Yes, I won't obviously get into the details, but I know why the reasons why they got deported was not anything that I would agree with.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome some phone calls and continue our conversation. We're talking, well, and people realize, I guess, that it's a quiet community in some ways. So to see 20,000 people in Madison in one of the largest protests since Act 10, all of a sudden you've made people aware of what your concerns are in a pretty major way, with businesses shutting down and some employers giving their employees the day off work so they can go and draw attention to these issues. You made your presence known.
That was our mission.
Yes, you were successful. We're going to welcome phone calls. We'll also be speaking in just a little while with the Director of Government Affairs for the dairy business. There are many dairy farms, milk farm operations that depend on undocumented labor in the state of Wisconsin. We'll talk about that, and we'll take your many phone calls that are coming in. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the protest last week, 20,000 Latinos gathering in Madison for a statewide protest, A Day Without Latinos, protesting two bills in the largest rally since the Act 10 protests, one fining local governments if they adopted policies keeping the police from asking about the immigration status of those charged with crimes, and another curtailing identification cards issued by local governments. That bill has passed both bodies and is awaiting the governor's signature. The other bill passed by the Assembly, but not yet by the Senate. We have many phone calls coming in at 800-486-8655. Before we go to our phone calls, what kind of response did you have from legislators on these specific bills, from the community at large, about your protest? Was it favorable, or is this so heated and so much of the anti-immigrant feeling in the country fueled by one of the major the front-running presidential candidate? I would imagine you had lots of different kinds of response.
Well, I haven't heard, I personally, in the groups that I associate with, most everybody is against these bills. Mm-hmm. And so they were very supportive of the protest. I would imagine that there's probably are people that were not so pleased by the protesters. But I don't know any of those people.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think most of the people were, as you mentioned earlier, were awakened by this. And whether they were for the bill or not, I think it made a statement where people are going to be a little bit more open to listen and see the impact of what they're suggesting really is. Because they sometimes they can anybody can convince themselves of something if they don't have that actual experience, you know, with the people that these bills will affect. You know what I'm saying? It takes that kind of moment for some people to start to go, whoa, wait a minute. I just thought this was going to affect these types of people. I didn't hear this side of the story. So I think that's why even being here today and having these points of view be told to the public is important.
Yeah, right.
They'll listen.
And that's exactly what happened in the other states, though, that passed these sort of bills. They did not anticipate these sort of negative consequences that ended up taking place. And so I would expect that Wisconsin would have learned from those lessons and not try to pass similar bills.
Mm-hmm. And how important, we hear frequently about the huge contribution that the undocumented workers have made to various industries all over. Is it specific to the dairy industry in the state of Wisconsin, or is it pretty wide-ranging, the economic contribution?
I think in Wisconsin, there's a large portion of it is the dairy industry, but there are also service industries where there are a lot of undocumented folks, hotels, cleaning companies, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Agriculture, construction, all the above.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls. Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. First of all, let me say that I'm an immigrant. Second, let me say that when we talk about the contribution of immigrants, we go to dairy farmers and the low-skill workers and the service industry. But let's remember, if you go to the doctor's lounge of any hospital in our state or anywhere in this country, if you go to the boardrooms of any of our major industries like Google or eBay or Microsoft, you will find that this country has been the beneficiary of the brain drain of the rest of the world. And this is something that we don't talk about. And there is so much hypocrisy on this, on both sides, on both the Democrat and Republican side on this, that it is pathetic. We have now heard one side of the story, and I agree with what your speakers have been saying, but there's also another side to the story, and that is that why don't we just open our borders if we don't enforce immigration laws? Why don't we just have open borders? The reality is that we have to secure our borders. And the Democratic Party stands square on the way of that. If they didn't, it would make and you know neither party. This country is in the main part a country of benevolent and good-hearted people, and neither party stands for ripping families apart and deporting people. So everyone knows that we must create a path to citizenship for all people that are here right now. We just cannot be a country that has the level of social services that we hope to provide for our people and open our borders.
All right, let's get some response. Marisa Bell?
Well, I actually agree and disagree because there is the bill that was bipartisan for immigration reform that came out of the Senate actually included a very, very robust portion that was very heavy on securing the border, increasing border security, and all these other types of measures. And it was bipartisan. It just never was brought up in the House. It was not a perfect bill, but it was something that would have definitely improved matters. I know this because I'm an immigration attorney and I know how the law is affected. And one thing that I find very curious is that a lot of times when people speak about enforcing our immigration laws, they don't understand that actually there are many sections of our Immigration and Nationality Act that actually require individuals to come here undocumented to even be eligible for the immigration benefits. So that is actually following the law. And there are also large portions of the Immigration Nationality Act that imposed sanctions and corporations or any employer who hires undocumented individuals. However, that is not a portion that anybody ever seems to want to enforce.
Right. Or talk about.
So while I agree that our immigration system is broken, there have been many proposals to improve it that included a lot. It was very heavy on securing the borders. So I don't agree when we say that we're Democrats are just all about having open borders and welcoming anybody and everybody who wants to come here, because that is not our position either. That I've not heard that. Mm-hmm. It is something where we need to find a consensus where we can secure our borders and also streamline the system so that people are not motivated to come here without following the process, because the way it is stands now, it's not unusual for a family who is in a war-torn country or where there's gangs and cartels and large criminal activity where the governments themselves are unable to curtail, to not want to wait 20 years before they can immigrate legally to this country, because in the meantime, they may not be alive in 20 years.
Yeah. So what is broken that you think needs to be fixed, and how would you fix it?
Well, let me just first say I really appreciate what the gentleman from Green Bay said. I think he made a lot of sense, and I liked his balanced approach to it, because I do, too, believe that there's fault, like I said earlier, on both sides. However, I will have one point of contention about what I believe is a false dichotomy about either you have to enforce the laws or have open borders. The vast majority of people that's come here illegally come for jobs that are there available for them to work. Everybody agrees that most everybody agrees on both sides of the aisle that we have a broken immigration system, and even some of the most ardent anti-immigrant folks and on who you know on the Republican side admit that there needs to be more work permits. So they know that there's people here that are working and that there's a situation that needs to be fixed. There's more Mexican immigrants that left the United States over the last 2 years than have come in. So that shows that it's really about jobs. So it's not this that if you open the borders that just everybody's going to flood in, specifically not Latinos. Latinos are hardworking folks who come looking for a better life. They come looking for work, you know, to be with their family and to work hard and to better their next generations.
Yeah.
So what's broken? A lot of things are broken. Where could I start? But I would say that the number one issue is exactly that. I actually do believe that we need to know every single person. The border is broken for various reasons. I do believe that every single person that comes in and out of our country, we should know who they are. But see, that's not because somebody wants to come and pick oranges and make money and work for their families. It's to keep out drug dealers. It's to keep out potential terrorists. It's to be able to know exactly who's coming in and out of our country. We should be very, you know, Ronald Reagan said, if they can get to our gates, let's open it up for them, the good folks, which 99% of them we all know are.
Yeah. Well, we want to get a better understanding of Latino involvement in the economy in the state of Wisconsin, and this may be news to some of you, as it was to me, at least the extent of the undocumented community in the dairy business here in the state. Joining our conversation for a little while is John Holyvote. He is Director of Government Affairs for the Dairy Business Association. Wisconsin dairy farmers have been pushing for immigration reform and say that we need a federal labor policy that guarantees that industry will have enough employees so they can keep their businesses going. Nearly one half or more of hired help on U.S. dairy farms is immigrant labor, with a large percentage of those workers being undocumented. So John is joining us for a few moments on the show. Hi, John. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I had no idea that there was so much undocumented work on dairy farms. Why is that?
Well, we really do struggle to attract and retain employees. It's hard work. It's unusual hours. It's actually fairly good paying work. We have a lot of farms starting in the mid-teens for hourly wages with benefits and housing often provided in addition to the wages.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, we have a hard time attracting and retaining native-born workers. again, just part of its hours, part of its quality of life, part of it's also the fact that we're located in remote parts of the state, so we're not in the fastest growing counties, typically speaking. We're in more remote places that we see a lot of young people actually wanting to move away from, unfortunately, instead of to. So we have a lot of challenges when it comes to securing employees to work on our farms.
Mm. So is that a fair, I don't know where I read this, but is it fair to say that nearly half or more of hired help on U.S. dairy farms is immigrant, a large percentage undocumented?
So the last numbers I saw were in 2008, and they said a 40%, and I'd say that was probably underreporting then, and it's grown substantially since. So I think half is an incredibly reasonable estimate to say 50% or more.
Mm. So what's we've been talking about how broken the whole system is. How is it broken for workers in this area, and what would fix what's broken in your industry?
So we have an agricultural visa program right now, but it does not work in any way for the dairy industry.
Hmm.
It's really designed for people who are going to be here providing migrant labor for short term during the harvest season of for fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So we have cows that need to be milked three times a day, 365 days a year. So we can't rely on a system that's designed to bring people in for a short period of time where then they'll leave. We really need some sort of visa that would allow people to come here, work on our farms, and stay long term. Now, that could be something specific done with the ag visa, whether it's a new type of ag visa or an expansion of the existing one. Or another idea that's been thrown out there is the idea of a W visa, some sort of visa for unskilled labor that could be utilized by multiple industries.
We have been, and let me see if it's applicable to your industry, too, because we're always talking when we talk about this issue about companies who hire people who are undocumented and whether or not you should be doing that. Mark asked this question on an email. Is it legal to hire undocumented workers? If so, if it's illegal, why are the laws not enforced?
So it's not legal. We follow an I-9 process. Basically, employees have to fill out a form. Any employer out there who's ever hired even just one person has had to do this process. As a former small business owner myself, I've been through this process. But as long as we have no reason to doubt the authenticity of the documentation provided through the I-9 process, that's really where it stops for us. In fact, asking for additional documentation beyond what's provided in the I-9 can sometimes be the basis for a discrimination claim. So if you have someone who you might suspect because of their national origin or racial background might be undocumented, you can't ask for additional documentation beyond what's provided on the I-9 form. And as long as what you've received through that process looks authentic, then you're good to go from an employer standpoint.
I see. Well, I know that the dairy farmer industry in the state of Wisconsin was concerned about protests last Thursday. Did a lot of people who work on dairy farms who are here undocumented go to Madison?
I think we had a lot of employees go regardless of immigration status because you know they saw it as something that impacted other people of their background or even people who maybe didn't have Hispanic background, but obviously many of their coworkers do and felt sympathy for the issues they're facing. We have people who went to join them and in support of them. So some farms had a hard time actually covering the work that needed to be done, but many, I think, actually made it work. We had people who reached out to their employees, talked to them about the bills and potential impacts. Some farmers who actually took a small portion of their workforce down with them and joined them in the protest.
Hmm.
So I think it was an anxious time for us because, again, we have a certain amount of work. It's unlike a building site where we can come back the next day and just pick up construction where we left off. We have a certain amount of work on these farms that needs to be done to provide care for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of farmers also are incredibly sympathetic with the difficulties that their workers face.
Interesting. And what would happen, because you got a taste of it last week, what would happen if all the undocumented workers on dairy farms in Wisconsin couldn't work anymore?
I think you would see a lot of people leave the industry, to be honest with you.
Really?
We already have a great amount of people who are leaving. We've never had this few of dairy farms in our state, probably in the entire history of our state. Last time we had this few dairy farms, we were a territory. So with milk prices being what they are, which they're very low in case you don't follow milk prices quite as closely as we do, I think you'd have a lot of farmers decide that now's the time to retire.
Really? Interesting. Maricibel, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, it is something that I think that is something people really do underestimate, the number of immigrants in Wisconsin, and that actually contribute not just to dairy farms, but I know that in sort of studies that I have read from that are state specific for Wisconsin alone, Latino-owned businesses have had sales and receipts of $2.4 billion and have employed a little over 10,000 people. And it does specifically say if they were to deport all of the unauthorized immigrants in Wisconsin, that would be about 14,000 jobs that would be lost and $2.6 billion in the economy. So it is not something that people should just ignore. $2 billion is a huge chunk of resources that we could use here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Jason Riley, who's a well-known conservative opinion writer from the Wall Street Journal, he happens to be African American, wrote a book called "A Case for Open Borders: Let Them In." Now, he wasn't advocating for open borders as much as the free flow of human capital, you know, more free market type philosophy. And he quoted and was citing the fact that in Texas, I don't know what this was, maybe 2011, the comptroller at the time of the state, which Texas has the second most undocumented in the persons in the United States behind California, said, and she was not a liberal or a Democrat. She was very conservative Republican, who noted that to the best of their estimation, because there is no cut and dry black and white numbers how you can really determine it, but to the best of their ability to do it, they said that it would have been a net loss if they had all left the state of Texas by in the billions. Just immediately. And so, I mean, the economic impact on every single state that, you know, it's obvious. And it's not a partisan, it shouldn't be a partisan issue.
It really ought not to be. Unfortunately, what we have going on now, it seems like it's Democrats versus Republicans, and it's only because in more recent years, Republicans have really gone further and further right, but it wasn't always that way. But it seems now the most vocal of the Republicans are very anti-immigrant and have no qualms about just putting it out there. And whereas Democrats now are, claiming to be the party of inclusivity, we still have some work to do, but I do believe in comparison and in today's culture that Democrats definitely are leaning more toward policies that are more immigrant friendly.
We want to thank you very much for joining the conversation and shedding some light on the dairy industry. John, let me just ask you, do you have any hope that this logjam on immigration, it's hard to imagine it's going to be, look at the logjam everywhere right now. It's hard to imagine things being examined carefully and thoroughly and some immigration reform happening, isn't it? Or maybe you're more optimistic.
I think we do face an uphill battle for sure if we're trying to get anything done before November. But I think we do have a real opportunity with the new president, regardless of who that person is, to try to push forward an agenda that includes this. That combined with a new speaker and potentially shifts in the control of the Senate, I think give us an opportunity that maybe we haven't had in a long time to actually try and get something accomplished.
Thank you very much for joining us, John Holyvoat, Director of Government Affairs for the Dairy Business Association. I promise you we'll be back and take many more of your phone calls, and we'll do that momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we go to Marty in Kenosha next. Hi, Marty.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Now tell me, how off the mark am I in thinking that it's just a Republican ploy to gin up their, pardon my French, their numbskull base of voters? with this immigration issue when they know full well what would happen if they all left. Isn't it? It's just politics, isn't it?
Zeus, what do you say?
I don't want to answer that.
Yeah, well, you don't have to.
Well, I think it's obvious, like I had mentioned earlier, you know, even Sean Hannity was mentioning 4 years ago when they did the autopsy that he had finally seen the light and was waving the white flag that we have to do something about this immigration issue and finally find a compromise. But 4 years later, some amnesia. Here comes the presidential politics with the primary system that we have in many states where, yes, once again, the tail can wag the dog, and it shouldn't be that way. So in some ways, I'm hoping that the person that comes out of the Republican nomination won't be somebody like Donald Trump, and that they'll finally come to the conclusion that we need to get this settled, and if they were to win the presidency, that we can get this settled and get to a point to where we could start talking about the issues that should be the important issues to talk about. You know, immigrants, and I should say Hispanics in general, you know, immigration's number 4 or 5 on their list of important things. But it has a force field around all the other issues. I mean, they want to talk about healthcare and education and jobs just like everybody else. But this issue just keeps getting. So, yeah, I kind of agree with them that this is presidential primary politics.
Thanks for the call. Paul in Madison. Hi.
Hello.
Yes, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, this seems to be a highly biased program on Wisconsin Public Radio. My wife is a legal immigrant who came to the United States approximately 40 years ago, and she came here legally, and people that are here legally and illegally are going to have very different experiences. And I've been trying to sponsor one of my wife's nieces who doesn't have any kids legally to the United States. I think we started in 88. And these people seem to say that they want to be able to jump ahead to the head of the list with no consequences.
Marisabel.
Well, actually, that's something that comes up very frequently. There's many people who have immigrated to the United States and had followed the procedures. But again, there's different procedures for different people depending on which country you came from, depending on which process you want to follow, what type of visa you want. So to say that somebody came here legally because they were sponsored by a family member and they waited and then they were brought here, that's one way out of many ways that somebody could come here. You can actually come here, as I stated previously, undocumented, and that is the exact way you're supposed to come here to begin the process. But to say that they're trying to jump the line, it's really unfair to say, because the immigration laws are constantly changing, and what was proper back 20, 40, 50 years ago is not the same as what it is now, because there are way more restrictions and loopholes and all sorts of if, then, or but that you have to go through. So it's not necessarily jumping the line. It's really that the line has curves and corners and steps that you have to do now.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't a bias show. We wanted to find out why 20,000 Latinos came to Madison last Thursday, and that's the angle that we took for this show, and that's fine. We certainly do a lot of shows on immigration. This was to understand what happened. Marty in Lancaster, getting short on time. Hi, Marty. Marty, are you there?
Oh, hello. This is Mary.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Mary, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's Mary.
Yeah.
The reason is that, like the gentleman before, is the whole thing is they are here illegally. They broke the law. If I break the law, I have to pay the consequences. I cannot plead that I didn't know or I'm whatever. You're here illegal. That right there is the problem. And then allowing the people to come in and stay, and that undercuts local labor, and for everybody else, they're paid in cash. They're allowed to 16, 20 people in a house on the farm. And the gentleman from the milk board, you know, the price of milk is down. Really? Well, then, how do they, what kind of pay do they pay them?
All right, we only have about 40 seconds. Zeus?
Well, I would say that, you know, yes, we are a nation of laws, but we're, our judicial system is based on commiserate type consequences for the crimes committed. So first of all, coming in undocumented is not a crime. It's a civil misdemeanor, such as little as maybe getting a speeding ticket. Should you be called an illegal for the rest of the time until you've paid that fine or until you get caught driving too fast or something? I mean, I know that's kind of an extreme example there, but the bottom line is that they're not necessarily willing to have any consequences, but we need to make sure that they're measured consequences. Not even on the Republican side are most of them saying that they can't come, you know, here, that they're going to give them plain amnesty. They're going to sit there and say they have to potentially pay fines and stuff like that. So,
thank you both very much for being with us. Thanks. So Rodriguez, president of Rodriguez Corporation, specializing in education reform, school administration, nonprofit management, Latino president of St. Anthony School in Milwaukee, he was. And we also thank Marissa Bell Cabrera, private immigration attorney. She is also chair of the Latino Caucus of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this program, and thanks to Kendra Smith for on-air production here in Milwaukee.